Alrighty, this morning you can turn to Matthew chapter 8. We're going to be looking at Matthew 8 verses 23 through 27 today. We continue to walk through the Gospel of Matthew. Last week, right, these two passages go hand in hand. Last week we saw as great crowds of people were flocking to Jesus as he was healing them, he was performing miracles, he was teaching with authority, and they're beginning to recognize there's something unique about Jesus, and a great number of people come to follow him. And it's in that moment that Jesus tells his disciples, hey, we're going to go to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. So they're up far in the northern end of the Sea of Galilee at Capernaum, and Jesus commands his disciples to get ready to go. And last week what we looked at is, as he's preparing to go, there's two different individuals that come and say, either, hey, I'll go right now wherever you lead, or I'll come but when it's convenient. And in both of those cases, we saw Jesus communicate a difficult but a realistic message to those who would follow him, reminding them that anybody who wants to come and follow Jesus, it's a total commitment with urgency, right, to put Jesus in the first place of their life and to follow him. But now in Matthew chapter 8, verses 23 through 27, we're going to see that those who do that, those that are committed to following and walking and going with Jesus, they're going to encounter some of those real challenges that Jesus promised the guys who wanted to come and follow him. And in the process, Jesus is going to continue to reveal to those that are around him that he's not just a really good teacher. And he's not just a guy with a great healing ministry. There is something fundamentally different about Jesus than anybody that these people have seen before and anybody that you and I will ever interact with. Jesus is not the same, and that's going to be driven home today in Matthew chapter 8, verses 23 through 27. We're in a passage that, again, I think is, if you grew up in and around church, Sunday school, or anything like that, this might be a passage that you go, oh, I know about this one, but I encourage us to come back to it and see it with fresh eyes and a heart willing to see who Jesus is and to respond to him. So Matthew chapter 8, verses 23 through 27 says, "And when he got into the boat, his disciples followed him. And behold, there arose a great storm on the sea, so that the boat was being swamped by the waves, but he was asleep. And they went and woke him, saying, 'Save us, Lord, we're perishing.' And he said to them, 'Why are you afraid, O you of little faith?' Then he rose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. And the men marveled, saying, 'What sort of man is this that even winds and sea obey him?'" Hey, just imagine Jesus. So he's commanded his disciples to get ready. We're going to go across. He boards a boat with his with a bunch of disciples. The boat at that time probably holds about 15 people, 26 feet long. It's a fishing boat, more than likely. And if you remember that at least four of his disciples at this point, we've already been told, they're fishermen by trade. Right, Peter, Andrew, James, and John were all fishermen on the Sea of Galilee. So it's something they would have been familiar with. The Sea of Galilee, for those of us that have never been there, it's about 13 miles from north to south and about 7.5 miles wide from side to side. So it's not just a lake. It's a big old booger, right? And it's interesting, as you start to look at the Sea of Galilee, it sits almost 700 feet below sea level. That's crazy, right? 696 feet below sea level. It sits kind of in a bowl with these high hillsides on either side. And you can imagine, right, if you're sitting in a bowl and wind whips off of those hills, it can create huge storms. In modern history, they've recorded waves up to 10 feet tall whipping through on the Sea of Galilee. Now, I don't know about you, like, I'm not a water person. Like, I like water if I can, like, touch the bottom of it or if I can get off of it quickly. I'm not one of those people that really loves to go to sea, right, where you can't see anything around you. Like, you're just out there bobbing around and waiting to die. That's kind of how I feel when I go on water. I like to look at water. Like, yeah, you put me on the beach, you just plant me there, I'll just watch waves roll in for hours. That's great time. But I'm not really one of those people that just loves to go out there. Like, I'll go explore, like, let's go explore mountains and things that we can put our solid feet on, right? But water, there's something about it. And yet, so there's these huge storms that can come across, and that's exactly what happens in verse 24. He gets on the boat, his disciples follow him, and it says there arose a great storm. And the word for great is, it's kind of like it's a violent earthquaking type storm. Like, so it's not like, yeah, then there was a pretty solid headwind, and they were like, oh man, we got to paddle against this booger. No, it's like and it's to the extent that it says that the boat is being swamped, or that water is coming into the boat. And this is where, as a non-water person, I go, that's why you don't do that. Right? Like, it's all fun and games until waves or sharks, right? Those two things. There's no sharks in the Sea of Galilee, so all we're worried about is waves. A massive storm blows in. It's pushing waves and water into the boat, and so that it's beginning to take on water. And I'm not a great scientist, but I think the water is supposed to be outside of the boat, not inside of the boat, right? And after you take on so much water inside the boat, it stops being a boat and becomes a submersible object. And remember, you got four guys who are fishermen. James and John, like, they left their dad's boats to follow Jesus. They live on the sea. It's what they do. There's no record on the beginning front that they complain about, hey, Jesus, this isn't really great, like, sailing weather, right? We shouldn't go, like, there's none of that. In fact, like, all of the details are pretty much limited to Jesus says, let's go to the other side. They get in the boat. They're going to the other side. They're on the middle of the lake or the middle of the sea, and it all hits the fan. Now, what you get in this, the scenario is painted pretty clearly for us in verse 25. They went and woke Jesus, saying, save us, we are perishing. Save us, Lord, we are dying. Here's what is happening. The professionals are terrified. And Jesus is asleep in the boat. And the professionals wake up the son of a carpenter and say, you got to do something. We're dying. I don't know how many of you, if you're flying on an airplane, and a flight attendant comes back hurriedly and comes to your seat and says, hey, I really need you to come up front. The pilot's freaking out. We're dying. You need to come pilot this thing. How many of you are like, well, good day to be flying? Like, there's a couple of you that are like, I'm a pilot. That's okay. Like, I'm talking about us normal people. That don't, like, that you stick us in there and we go, there's a wing, and there's the ground, right? Like, oh, no. And they come back to you and say, the pilot is beside himself with fear and he needs you to get through this turbulence. No, thank you. Do you get an idea of, like, how bad of a day this is for the guys on the boat? It's easy for me to read and go, yeah, it's a big storm. Everybody's terrified. But when I'm in a place, like, and I love working with people who are, like, working within their skill set, because it's like, I can just, like, I'll draft you, and you just do, like, I'll hand you tools. I'll do whatever it is that you want, right? But when the professional begins to scratch their head or begins to become frightened, this isn't feeling like a very good time anymore. And there's a truth in here that I don't want you to miss. And that is that following Jesus will take you beyond your competency. Following Jesus will take you beyond your talent. It will take you beyond your personality. Like, Jesus had just told these two other guys on the other side of the shore, like, hey, following me is no walk in the park. Right? The one guy says, I'll go with you wherever you want to go. I'll follow you. And Jesus says, well, I'm kind of homeless. Does that sound good for you? Another guy says, well, I'll go, but I need to do these other things. And Jesus says, like, no, following me demands that you leave everything else and follow me. And now in practice, the guys that have followed him are to a place where if something doesn't happen, they are quite confident. Like, I don't think they're overreacting when they say, Lord, save us, we're perishing. I think they have a pretty good idea that they're in big trouble. Kind of like it's almost a really nice parallel of the book of Jonah when Jonah is on the sea and the fishermen begin to like they're scuttling everything, right? They're throwing off all of the baggage. Like they're guys who live on the water, and they finally come down and they wake Jonah up and they say, "You need to start praying to your God. We're all praying to ours, and we're pretty sure we're about to die." Dire situation, right? And we can read it, and it's pretty sanitary for me to read about a giant storm on the sea when I am firmly planted on firm ground inside a covered roof, and I go, that sounds bad. And yet, we know by experience, if we've been following Jesus long enough, if we're following him, he has taken us to places where we have no answers in and of ourselves. He has taken us to a place where we are desperate for him to show up, and if he doesn't show up, we're in big trouble. And hear me on this, that's normal. When a storm hits us, though, and I don't want to get too far away from the text, because we're talking about a real storm and not just the storms of life, and we're going to talk about why that's so important here in a minute. But when life hits you upside the head with a storm, I don't know about you, but my initial reaction is typically something weird is happening to me. Especially if I was following Jesus and then the storm hit. I go, Jesus, I don't think this was on the map. I don't think this is how this is supposed to go. And yet, I think what is normal for us as we lay out the whole New Testament and those that committed to following Jesus with their whole person, like what we find more often than not is that storms and going to the place where Jesus needs to show up is normal for those who are following Jesus. And yet in our flesh, we avoid going to those places where Jesus has to show up. We might often say, I'm just not whatever enough. In ministry, I've heard it a whole lot. People say, I just don't really like people. Like, Jesus is going to take you beyond your love for people because he's going to have, like, he has to show up and give you a love that's beyond what you can do because if you follow him and walk with him, he's going to allow you to be in situations where his love has to come through you because your love's not going to be enough. Or you say, I'm just not talented enough to do that. Well, praise the Lord you're not, like, because Jesus has to show up and do it. Otherwise, like, everybody would say, you did a great job. It's all about you. Like, when these fishermen get to the other side, when the disciples get to the other side of the sea, like, they're not going to be able to say, we just figured out how to tack the wind the right way, and we paddled really hard, and we navigated the storm. They're going to get to the other side, and they say, the weirdest thing in the world happened. Jesus spoke, and the sea just knocked it off. And nobody's going to say, wow, that was just a wonderful work of piloting a boat that you did, even though that's what they were known for. We might have also said, or we've heard it said, or we might have even tried to encourage other people and say, well, God won't give you more than you can handle. I would have loved it in the middle of them being terrified about the storm and say, well, guys, this isn't more than you can handle. They're waking Jesus up saying, this is more than we can handle. We're dying. The reality is faith will take us to a place beyond our ability so that you cannot rely on yourself. Now, on face value, how many of us like that? If we're being really honest, we will avoid going beyond our ability and going beyond our self-reliance if we're given the choice. We will stay within the safety of the sandbox. Like right? Like, I won't go to the sea if I have a choice. And yet following Jesus means let's let go of comfort because he's leading us to a place that's not comfortable. And taking steps beyond what we are naturally gifted for because he has to show up. And I'll say it again, these guys, at least some of them on the boat, professional fishermen, professional boat pilots, are begging to the person that, like, that what they know about Jesus is he is the son of a carpenter. He's a really good teacher, and he has the authority to cast out demons and to heal people. But they don't, like, based off of their knowledge of Jesus, they don't know if he's ever even set foot on the sea. And they're asking somebody, not with their skills on face value, to rescue them from a hazard in their workplace, the place where they are the experts. And it raises a question, maybe you've asked this question before, like, why is Jesus asleep? When all this is going on, why is Jesus asleep? I'll start with where I don't think he's asleep, so then we'll move to why I think he's asleep. The first one, that the reason we might tell ourselves, which I don't think is backed up in how Jesus responds to the crisis, nor in how Jesus relates to his disciples in every other situation, but we might would think that he's asleep because he just doesn't care. He's asleep in the boat because he doesn't care what's going on in the boat. I don't care about you guys. I'm fine. I'm asleep. Like, they are just totally out of sorts, and Jesus just can't be bothered about it. And we say, that's not the case. But how often, when we are in distress, do we not seek the Lord because we go, I don't think he cares about this. I don't even think he sees what's going on. I don't think he, like, even if he knew what was going on, I don't think he's going to care about it at all. The second thing, which is probably moving closer to reality, is my thing, he's really tired. He needs a nap. And there's some truth in this, that Jesus is going to display the fullness of him being God in the flesh when he calms the sea with a word, and yet at the same time we're confronted with this reality that he is also fully man, needing sleep, asleep in the boat. That Jesus is not, while he's in the flesh, he's not just a guy who goes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and never stops and sleeps. And some of you men, and I need to hear this myself, we might need to learn this from Jesus. Like, sometimes we need to stop. And we go, oh, I can't stop because I've got... And the older I get, maybe you're with me, the older I get, the more I realize if I stop for a minute, it's still going to be there. It's not going anywhere. Like, there are things that have to be taken care of right now, but there's a lot of things that we just say, I have to do it now because if I don't do it now. And the reality is, we see Jesus throughout his ministry, he pulls away from the activity that we go, this is the most important activity, and we see Jesus rest. We see Jesus go away for quiet time. We're like, there's so much more you should be doing right now than praying on a mountaintop to the Father. You should be immersed. You have a limited window. You got to give it all that you've got. And we go, why is Jesus resting? But even in his being fully God and fully man, Jesus is demonstrating to us that there is a good rest that is required. Like, he's given us rest. He demonstrates that he himself rests. So I think there is an aspect that he's tired, and he demonstrates his humanity and the fact that he is asleep on the boat. And then the third one, I think, that also is highlighted within the text, is tied to his response when he wakes up and they're saying, Lord, save us, we're perishing. And he says to them, why are you afraid? Oh, you of little faith, why are you afraid? And then he simply stands up, rebukes the winds and the sea, and there's a great calm. I think part of the reason why Jesus is asleep is because he's not worried. He's not worried because he controls the wind and the sea. So you and I think, need to hear this. We like to think that Jesus is just as limited in our distress as we are. That Jesus is just as limited by the resources that we are limited by. He is just as limited by the capacity to address the situation as we are. So sometimes we might look at the situation that we're in, why would I ask Jesus when he can only do what I can do? And when Jesus stands up, he does what the disciples could never have done. What people still cannot do. And think about this. In all of the great inventions that have come about in the last 2,000 years, has there yet been a device or a person who can say, I'm going to stop a hurricane in its tracks? I'm going to stop a storm in the middle of it. Just like we're just going to kill switch. No, in all of our great innovativeness, we can track storms. We can tell when they're building. We can say, wow, that looks like it's going to be a really nasty thunderstorm tomorrow night. And do nothing about it. We can diagnose, but we can't do anything about it. So even the disciples, they may have realized, uh-oh, the wind is picking up. We need to get off the water. But they couldn't get off the water in time. We don't know that. But what we do know is that they were helpless to solve the situation, and Jesus simply stands up and speaks to it, and it stops. And their response, who is this? What sort of person is this that even the winds and the sea obey him? All of a sudden, they're confronted again with the fact that they don't really understand who Jesus is. They've seen him teaching with great authority, which was blowing their minds. Then they have seen him healing all sorts of people with all kinds of infirmities. He's driving out demons. And again, they're astonished at what he does. And then, though, what kind of a person talks to the winds and the sea and it just goes from crazy to mirror lake? Who is this? And what they're kind of saying is that there's no category for this type of person. They've never seen anybody that could do this. I've never seen anybody that could do this outside of Jesus. Neither have you. And the reason why Jesus doesn't worry about it is because it's not just that he's a great teacher, and it's not just that he's a great healer, and but he is the one who has authority over all of creation. And he has the ability to halt it in its stops. And again, that is a Jesus that is very different than one who is working with the same capacity and resources that you and I are. In Colossians chapter 1, starting in verse 15, I want you to hear about what is said about Jesus. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. I'll say that again. All things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. We're talking about Jesus. We're talking about the one through whom and for whom and by whom all things hold together. Are the storms that we see here in Matthew chapter 8, it was completely, utterly beyond the disciples' ability to do anything about. And yet for Jesus, the creator and sustainer of all things, it's simple. It's just a simple stand up, stop, and it's done. And when we think about our lives, the storms in life, the winds and the seas that we encounter, they are violently huge for us. But for him, he's not even close to capacity. He's infinite in his greatness. And when we don't trust him, it's not a reflection of his inability, but it's a reflection of our little doubting hearts. He says to the disciples, "Oh, you of little faith." There might be some rebuke in that, but it's also just a fair assessment. Your faith is lacking. Their faith is lacking because it's driven home by that last question: what sort of person is this? That they don't fully understand who Jesus is. Because if they understood who Jesus is, they'd probably have a little bit more confidence about the situation. And what I find amazing about the way that Jesus just stands up and rebukes the winds and the wave and they stop it, is that is not at all the way that the disciples were probably thinking Jesus was going to solve the problem. Right? When they wake him up and say, "Save us, we're perishing," they're probably in their head going, "Jesus, pick up a paddle. Jesus, pick up a bucket and do what we could do, but we just need more hands." And yet when Jesus solves the problem, he does it in a way that they would never have imagined that he was just going to stand up and speak over it. And in the same way, I think when we expect Jesus to show up, how do we expect him to work? Usually in the way that you and I would work. But are we trusting him to the extent that when he shows up, we're trusting him big and not little? When storms come, where do our eyes go? By God's grace, I think sometimes he allows the storms to take place so that our eyes will be forced towards him in dependence. Beyond our ability and beyond our capacity, the reality is that you and I, we don't need a God made in our image. Now, that'd be a really bad day if he is made in our image where he has our strengths, our abilities, and he just does the things that we want him to do. What we need is a God who is the creator of all things, who speaks things into being, who holds them in his hand, and who we can see with confidence that he is bigger than what we are facing. And that doesn't mean that he's just going to automatically stop every storm. I was thinking about this when, in the book of Acts, Paul is shipwrecked on his way to Rome to go to have his trial in Rome from Jerusalem. And what's amazing about that is Paul is not given the ability to stop the storm from taking place. But what he does, he has a word that says basically like, hey, as long as everybody stays on the boat, we're going to be spared. And they have to ride out that storm and they get shipwrecked and they get stuck on an island. Like, Paul doesn't get the authority to stop every storm that comes his way. Neither do you and neither do I. But what we do get to see is Jesus' sustaining faithfulness in the middle of things beyond our ability and beyond our capacity. So the biggest question that I could leave you with this morning is, how do you need to trust him today? And when I say, how do you need to trust him, it's not just an intellectual, God, I believe that you're bigger than this situation. What does it look like for you to follow him where you don't have answers? Is there anything on your plate where you are wrestling with and you go, as soon as I have just a little bit more information, then I can follow him? But what does it look like to follow him, trusting his character even though you don't know what's beyond your ability? You don't know exactly what's on the other side of that. What does it look like for you to follow him in that kind of faith? And it's in that kind of following that I think we find that a little bit of faith goes a long way. When Jesus later in the book of Matthew says, if you just have the faith of a mustard seed, look at what could happen. And yet here he says, you don't even have, like, he's not saying, oh, you just have a little mustard seed faith. He says, you have deficient faith. And the hardest thing about this is faith is a muscle that is exercised. Trusting God, a growing confidence in who he is and what he's capable of. Trusting him beyond what we can plan for, what we can risk assess, what we can do on our own abilities. But trusting him based on who he has revealed himself to be. And I think you and I need to do a little bit more wrestling like the disciples that say, what kind of God is this that all of these things obey him? Rather than, yeah, this is the Jesus I know. I got, he's, yeah, okay, it's all fine. He's in my box. I understand him.